Unchurned is presented by Update AI.
You know, what is a QBR such a waste of time? But if I came to that QBR and I was like, hey, like, here's how everyone, all the other pizza shops in metro areas in Texas are doing with their, like, here's their overtime and their gross margins on food. And here's, like, why we think you guys are, like, in fifth place. Wouldn't you like to be in first place? Like, let's help you get there. Here's exactly what they're doing that you're not doing. And yeah. That is powerful.
Wow. So COVID came. There was a free for all, for a free fall, I should say, in the restaurant industry. Clearly, it impacts you in very negative ways. And desperate times call for creative measures. You guys took laid off workers that you had to lay off, and you created this new role in this new ecosystem, this new operating model that's now helping you with predictable costs and better hands-on customer success of your portfolio.
Yes. And it's really exciting because there's a whole new
And yet you've never been named a top 25 CS influencer, and I want to know why. Welcome to this episode of Unchurned, everybody. My team around me is going to crucify me. They are killing me with the daggers in their eyes right now. It's been 8 minutes. No, it's been like 6 minutes.
He did that on purpose because he didn't want any of my JLo content.
Yeah. But remember now, Chrissy and Chris and John, like, people have zero context for the last 8 minutes. So
that's the way these podcasts work.
That's the way it works when you don't hit the record button.
Can somebody mute Josh?
Yes. So we're just going to cut the intro. I'm Josh. That's Chrissy. That's John. And we have the spectacular Chris Sundberg, who is the senior vice president of customer success at Restaurant 365. If it worked last time,
because that's the content we wanted to bring back from the past 8 minutes. Thanks.
Well, that was a memorable moment for me, Christy. Chris was just in the process of telling us how fun his organization is and other stuff. And we're
Chris, I hear you had a recent new hire.
Who's new on your team? Gosh, surprise announcement.
Yeah. I don't know, this guy named Mickey. He says he knows you guys.
Mickey Powell? You hired Mikey? That's so great.
Yep. Started last Monday. No.
Mickey Powell.
But yeah, so anyways, I'll real quick. We just have a record of doing things that are a little less normal, maybe not so HR friendly. And so one of the traditions we've gotten into is what we call our Murder Barn Summit. So every year we get a number of leaders, and we had like 20 leaders last year go to this beautiful cabin in Utah, like Park City area, for Murder Barn. And you can guess what we do there.
Who do we murder?
Is this like summer?
So, and then who do we marry and fuck?
That's
not how it works.
Oh God.
Interesting.
It's not just a company-wide marry, fuck, kill. Okay.
I think the murder was bad enough, Josh. Okay.
No, but you know, marry.
Yes.
What? Okay. Anyway.
So Mickey was, he was at this competition that we, where I met you guys all last year. You want to introduce that again too?
We've evolved. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
That's fine. Yeah. So
this one is the worst so far.
So Mickey comes out. I invite Mickey to come be a guest speaker. How are we going to use AI to help improve gross margins, all that kind of stuff? And he did a phenomenal job, and he hung out with us for like 3 days. And at the end of this thing, I had a surprise murder mystery, of course, dinner. Right. And I have a picture. I probably can't share it with you guys, but it's Mickey with fishnet stockings on his arms and like a wig. And I don't know if he put lipstick on, but he crushed his character so well that we had to hire him.
You had to hire him.
So,
This never made it its way back.
I never get interviews like this. That's what's wrong with the whole hiring process.
That's right. Everyone's doing it wrong. No, we vibe really well with Mickey. And so then, this last, I don't know, a couple of months ago, we had lunch since he lives down the street from me. And he's just like, hey, I'm open. I was like, we're looking for a CS operations analyst. And he's like, dude, that's like right up my alley. And yeah, made it happen.
That's great. And I know Mickey has a true passion for CS operations. That's what he's been doing in the past before he was up with Update AI. And
exactly.
So I know he's got a whirlwind of awesome experience and it's something that lights him up. Christy, what I was going to go around the room and do was like, you know, to Mickey's new boss, say something amazing about Mickey. So Christy, over to you and then John.
You'll never have a shortage of ideas. I think Mickey, his mind is working 24/7. And unlike most people's, he just thinks so creatively. And Chris, you got a sample of this, right? When we were at before it was the CCO club, but the first event that the Hack of Future that Josh and Update led, where Mickey's group, right? They talked about like VR and they had like, I mean, like I was sitting there and like, I loved our group. I think that we should have one, but like, if we got a sample of like how that group was thinking, and I know that was spearheaded a lot by Mickey. And I think what you guys will come to find is that like, listen, they're not all going to be $1 million ideas and you're not going to implement or want to implement all of them, but you'll never have a shortage of them. And I think the ones that you do implement will be very fruitful for the business.
Totally. Yeah, Love it. You stole mine. I agree completely with that. I will say like from a personality standpoint, I think you're going to find just a lot of, what you were talking about before is just out of the box thinking. Like you say we do non-traditional events, like the way that he thinks, the way that he supports people, the way that he loves people is very human centric and very human forward. Mm. And I love to hear that you have a little bit of a, like a non-traditional environment. And I know that he's absolutely going to thrive and continue to push the boundaries on what you guys do and how you define success.
Man, yeah. This is getting like, emotional here. This is great, man.
Yeah. No,
he's going to watch hard. This. So.
Oh, yeah. We're going to force him to do that.
Yeah.
And like
and you're going to send us the fishnet pictures for the next cover.
Ooh, yeah, you know, next cover.
So, Chris, tell us about what you got going on at Restaurant 365, a little bit about the company, and then, you know, more importantly for this conversation, about what your org looks like.
Yeah. It's, I mean, for anyone that loves restaurants, you guys like to eat, right? It's nice to be in that field. And, you know, I just had breakfast at some local cafe and got to talk to the owner about what we do and how we help restaurants really control their costs, right? Like labor costs, food costs, manage everything, help them scale up from a few locations to, you know, thousands if they ever get there. But, I've been there for 8 years. So I am it's been a long, long journey, but an amazing journey. Started when maybe we were 2 million in revenue and we're just breaking like 130 million. So it's been like a journey.
What was your first role there 8 years ago?
A director of customer success. So really exciting journey. senior director. Yeah. Anyways.
Go through it. So director, because this is for aspiring CCOs. This episode, this program, right? So how did it work?
And I've always been over support, the CSM team, and onboarding. Right. Okay. So all post sales activities. Right. Came in as a director, a very small team, very nimble, and senior director. And then went to a VP of customer success and then a senior VP of customer success. And I've been reporting to the CEO the entire time until actually just this year, we decided that we were big enough that we needed to change it up a little bit. And now I report to
Don't say CRO.
Incredible. Yes. And I actually, you know, it was a bit of a, you know, it wasn't an exciting announcement or an exciting decision at first, but I do see it has been good for us. Like I do genuinely believe that it has helped align sales, marketing, and not that we needed to be aligned to marketing, but sales and CS even closer. And I think it was the right move. But
go deeper into that. Like how has it helped align sales and CS? And support.
Yeah, so our CRO, you know, traditional head of sales, very passionate, fiery. Like, we are going to win at all costs, right? Like, and he does, he delivers, and his team is amazing. But there was increasing friction, right? Because it was at the cost of retention, right? Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. kind of this butting heads. And so rather than us having to like try to be friends and not butt heads as much, now as one team, he is responsible as well for retention. And so him and the team have taken much more thought into how can we help CS? How can we make sure that we're also achieving these other goals? And then having my back too, when things maybe aren't going well, where it's like another department where we kind of need to come together and strategize on how to better align with product or dev or whatever it might be.
Has that alignment changed what you track as a CS leader? Are you kind of changing metrics and KPIs, or is it still kind of the same experience from
and incentives
side? And incentives? Yeah.
Yeah. No, we haven't changed any incentives or no. And honestly, like if retention suffers, it's still going to be like all fingers pointing at me.
Right.
So, but
yeah, and are you guys, I guess, just to get like deep into it, we transitioned from NRR over to GRR CSMs within our organization, and are seeing revenue kind of being taken away, mm-hmm. mostly from the CS org, which is a trend, but we're also, the more people that we talk to, the more we're seeing that pendulum is swinging right back to CROs, where growth and retention and opportunity is also coming back under the CS organization. Have you guys kind of been stable with NRR, or is there conversations around, rethinking that?
Yeah. So we're very gross retention focused. Like most of my leaders are compensated for retention.
Yeah.
On the net side, we did have CSMs for a while, like post COVID, before the CRO came in, we were doing all growth. Mm-hmm. And commissioning CSMs for all that growth. And we were doing really well. But as we started, just putting some gas on it, we didn't want to hold our CSMs accountable to such a high goal, mm-hmm. and be so overly focused on that growth. So we did bring in a sales growth team. They are now responsible. They've been responsible. And they have honestly done much better than our CSMs have done as far as like, raising the bar and hitting those goals. But we have an interesting model where our CSMs are also commissioned for upsells, and they don't split a commission, but they're like commissioned on top of the sales growth team. So they're motivated to work with sales to help make sure that those deals are getting closed. And that seems to be working well. They're also commissioned for retention. Mm-hmm. So, they have some like team motivation as well as working with different AEs and helping them grow.
It's like the shared tip model in restaurants.
Yeah, except we're not taking anything away from the pie. I don't know. And that's why it was a little, as long as they get their whole pie, we can get a little extra on top.
Yeah. Christy, what do you got? You got a look on your face like you got something.
So is it more like they're getting spiffed on top of it? Or is it part of like...
It's a percentage. It's like a full-on commission of what is sold that they had a part of. At the end of the quarter, they get commissioned on that. Now, there are other little spiffs you might do, for like a new product or something, like whatever, maybe new thing that we need them to kind of help that's in addition to their responsibilities. But yeah, and they also get commissioned for selling professional services.
Yeah.
Why'd you bring Mickey in? What was the need for an ops analyst underneath your group?
Honestly, I was tired of doing it myself.
Yeah. And doing what? Yourself? It's a good answer.
Just like retention, like is the first, like, I have to report every month to the executive team and the board every quarter on retention and why and really analyze and go deep. And it's getting harder and harder as we are purchasing other companies and bringing all this crappy data into like a Salesforce that you don't trust the data, and the amount of manual effort it takes me today to really dig deep and say like, this is a trend that we're seeing, or here's like how we might need to pivot a bit. Just that alone, like I'm desperate for someone in that role, because we've had people in the past do it, but then they've always kind of moved on to other departments eventually. And we just haven't had someone really supporting all of CS at that capacity. And it's been each individual manager supporting their respective teams and giving KPIs that maybe aren't, you know, apples to apples. Like, you know, we have different product lines. And so one director is giving me their time difference value, but they're calculating a little bit differently than my next director over a different product. So Mickey's going to come help.
What does success look like for Mickey's joining now in X number of months? Like, there's two questions around unlocking. The second one is going to be, what will you do with the extra time that he unlocks for you? The first question is, what insight, you know, depth of insight would you like him to unlock because he can be fully focused on it? Areas where, you know, you were just tied a little, you were just stretched a little thin. Where do you want him to go? What's like the art of the possible for you?
Yeah. Just speaking about retention itself, because we were very retention focused, like I've shared, doing the cohort analysis on a regular basis and then slicing that up a lot more granular than we have in the past. That alone would be huge for me to really be able to say, like, these are the segments we need to, you know, change how we're, you know, figure out like why these cohorts are suffering. Right. And then second to that is, you know, we have all this great usage data, right? And we do a level of health score and all that kind of stuff, but to take it back to, and I think we all kind of dream about this in the CS world, is like being able to really look at usage data and predict retention or growth and correlate it to what aspects of the usage can we really, like, really make the biggest difference. Mm. And no one's, we've gotten close here and there, but it's been, again, so manual. And for someone like Mickey to be able to come in and maybe automate that whole process and keep that, keep feeding us that data as we change, you know, the, what we're training, how we're onboarding our different adoption programs, right? Like that could really make a difference long-term.
What CSP are you guys on? CSP right now?
CSP
platform, CS platform.
Oh, we're using Gainsight.
Gainsight. So we'll be using Gainsight and their PX in some ways to correlate product usage to the different cohorts.
Yeah, we're actually still using Pendo. Yeah, we're using Pendo with Gainsight. But yeah, using that data, maybe leveraging AI a bit to be able to help, you know, do some of that prediction and then automate.
Mickey's going to turn your whole team into AI bots. Just wait for watch. Just wait for it. 3 years. Yeah, it's all going to be AI. Bring it.
Yeah, and we're struggling. It sounds like no one's really doing a lot. I mean, I know what you guys are doing, but there's still, I think, there's a lot of opportunity to leverage AI in the CS world. Support, we're implementing like the chat bots and all that kind of stuff, but we're not leveraging AI well anywhere else in CS.
Well, I want to ask that question because that's a leading question for my business. So I want to ask that question in a moment, but
gotta be careful how I answer that. Yeah.
But the other question that I already asked you is what is that unlock going to give you as the SVP of customer success?
Man,
what are you going
to
do?
There is just this never ending list of things I would like to be doing. I mean, I certainly would love to be out visiting the team. It's something I used to do a lot more that I feel like was very valuable, is going out and actually like having more individual summits with different teams geographically, you know, more face-to-face time with everybody within the CS org. There's 260 people in CS today, and it is just like,
wow,
being aware of who they are is such a challenge right now.
You have a team of 260 in your CS group?
260 people. Yeah. It's
wow,
growing rapidly, right? And we are still acquiring companies and bringing on their CS folks. And like, I need more time to do that right, I feel like, and not be in the weeds looking at, you know, doing analysis and making sure that my team's
making it. You buried the lead, Chris. You buried the lead, man. Like,
yeah. What roles make up that 260?
I mean, all of onboarding is a pretty healthy sized team. We have a very complicated onboarding process. I mean, it's like 3 months per project, and we have hundreds of projects going at one given time, and then multi, you know, like seven different products that people are implementing. Support our CSM team, a professional services team, which is separate from onboarding. It's like post onboarding professional services. And then we've carved out a very special like enterprise team, because as we are going up market, we are now working with like big brands like Jack in the Box, Burger King, right? And that just takes, that's like a whole different business in itself of how we support and manage and meet their needs. I mean, think about their needs versus like the mom and pop cafe I went to this morning. It's just, it's totally different business. So we have a special team that oversees the entire customer lifecycle for those clients. And then
so
finally, one more team that is kind of unique for us, but it's our partner channel. It's our resellers. We have a lot of bookkeeping firms who resell our product and support it, manage it. So we have a team that helps them be successful.
So you kind of answered it for me. So when you're going to Jack in the Box, you're talking to your decision maker, your buyer is the VP of operations or something along those lines, right?
Yep. Yep.
When or you're CTO, going to, yeah. Right. When you're going to Christie's parents, Italian, sub shop, something like that, right? Christie.
Yes. My parents are retired now, but they owned a deli for like 48 years.
Wow, 48 right. years.
Is that the one that J-Lo went to in the documentary? With the
No, but my parents did have a deli in the Bronx when my dad lived in the Bronx when he came here from Puerto Rico. But J-Lo will not claim to have ever attended. Or
whatever. Maybe I've been to that deli. I grew up in Jersey, by the way, Christy. So,
we're
East Coast love.
Neighbors.
Yeah.
You're both
being fantastic too. Deli. All my meats there. Yeah.
So Christie's parents deli / the version of it that has three or four locations, maybe, right? Are you, who's your buyer there? Is it the bookkeeping company that's your partner channel?
If they use a bookkeeper, but 50% of these like SMB restaurants use bookkeepers and the rest do it in-house.
So how are you?
So we sell to actually, the owners typically. It's the owners or the, you know, whether it's like VP of accounting, whatever, like whoever's running their account, their finance, if they're that big where they even have someone doing that. But a lot of these small shops, they have like Aunt Sally using QuickBooks part-time.
Yeah, my mom did bookkeeping for the deli for 48 years in a ledger with pen and paper.
Yeah, on paper.
Like she did bookkeeping like in a book.
Yeah. Yeah. So talk about ideal clients.
Who's the poor soul that's assigned Mrs. Faltarusso as the
Mrs. Serrano. That's my maiden.
Yeah, Mrs. Serrano. Mrs. Serrano. That because I can only imagine, like on a feistiness level,
nobody wants to work with my mother.
Like, no, but I'm serious. But there's a real question behind this, Chris. Like, how do you do that? Right. Like my friend, my best friend in Connecticut owns four bakeries, and like it's a mess because he's successful, but he's all over the place and he doesn't sleep and it's this and that. And you're going to get him to sit down and you're going to get him to attend a QBR. Fuck you. Right. Like, so like, you know, it's okay for the Jack in the Box director, like VP of operations, but how do you manage that? It's incredible to me.
No, that is a great question and has had been like the biggest pain for the first 4 years of my life at this company. Because like these are like think celebrity chefs and like all these, they just don't have the time or the discipline to maintain like a legit solution to manage their company, right? This just doesn't work. So
that actually gets into like some of my questions, specifically around like we're talking about customer success. How are your CSMs tracking the success of those folks working in this industry, it's probably like Josh has said, get on a QBR. No, absolutely not. Like these folks,
they don't want to get
on the enterprise side. They're not sitting in an office in front of a laptop all day. Like they're grinding out donuts and like, you know, all the stuff that they need to do for whatever I'm spacing on food words. but you know, how do you actually ensure enablement and engagement and usage and the traditional side of customer success in a very non-traditional market?
Yeah. I mean, you can only do so much. Like we haven't cracked the code of like, this is like how we get them all to engage. However, we did stumble a really awesome strategy through COVID, kind of a product of necessity. But, you know, COVID, obviously, if you owned a restaurant, I'm not sure if your mom retired before COVID with the deli, but.
No, at the end of COVID, they actually survived pretty well during COVID.
Did they really?
So
good for them.
Yeah.
Good for them.
Yeah.
That sucked. For anyone that owned a restaurant, like, I am sorry. Like, that just sucked. And I had to lay off half the team. 50% of the team, you know, was told, all right, what do we do, right? Most of our, like 70% of our clients were getting credits. And we did everything we could to keep our clients. And I think we actually weathered that storm as better than anyone expected. And the restaurant industry is so resilient. But as part of this, you know, we were still selling. And I wanted to bring people that we had laid off back in as contractors. But that's a no, that's illegal. And so to get around that, I was like, well, what if these people kind of like made a little company and joined forces or something? Then we could just outsource to this company now. And that's what we did. And we were able to like create a couple different, we call them our service partners, where they're very knowledgeable of the software. We trust them. So we started giving them all of our, you know, small 1 to 4 location projects. And what was beautiful about this is they were able to offer those little services. Like they could identify, oh, you guys don't have time to do bank reconciliation. You don't have time to enter new items as they come in or whatever it is. They could offer these like little ancillary services and charge them for their own business as part of their small little shop, right? So they would start these bookkeeping firms. We would assign them projects they would implement as if they were us. And then they would try to upsell their services after they've identified what they need. And
how many folks was this, Chris?
That we actually created. I mean, it was maybe five folks that initially like kind of created these little companies. And then those have grown into like pretty legit businesses.
And so like out of those five, I'm sure one or two of them has dropped out. They found a new job, something like that. But some of them have actually flourished and become their own proper business and grown.
Yeah. Like the three original companies we worked with have all flourished and have, you know, maybe 20 people now on their staff, and we just outsource projects to them, and they do a great job, and they have their own training, and we support them. And they do it for at or under cost. And that's like the real beauty is they were able to reduce the cost of onboarding for this segment that was really hard for us. That was like just barnacles. You could never get them out of onboarding. And they were able to do it at a cost that was consistent. It's a flat fee. And drastically improve our gross margins and drastically increase our retention for this segment.
It's a flat fee because they're charging you a retainer or something. So it's just a fixed cost for that, for you and for them.
Yeah. We just identify, you know, here's the fixed cost, yeah, and every project will be at this cost. And now actually when we sell it, we ask our clients pay them directly. So it doesn't even pass through us because that revenue would be zero margin, you know?
Did you have that reseller partner network before COVID?
Not in this method, not like this way. It was, we had a reseller network that was them on their own, you know, as bookkeepers signing up their own customers and then doing what they want with the software. But this is now like an extension of our onboarding team.
Wow. So COVID came, there was a free fall, I should say, in the restaurant industry. Clearly it impacts you in very negative ways, and desperate times call for creative measures. You guys took laid off workers that you had to lay off, and you created this new role in this new ecosystem, this new operating model that's now helping you with predictable costs and better hands-on customer success of your portfolio.
Yes. Yes. And it's really exciting because there's a whole new,
and yet you've never been named a top 25 CS influencer. And I want to know why.
Well, maybe we're waiting for this next piece.
Well, we're here to make Chris famous with this episode. That's right. So, that's right.
Or won a CS Leadership Excellent Award. That's a whole separate conversation. These are the heroes, folks. These are the heroes of customer success right here. I love it. So sorry, Chris, I cut you off. Keep going.
No. Good. So there's one more piece to this that like has always been the dream, like for the service partner direction. And that is, instead of us selling these SMBs, you know, these little deli shops on our paper, and then knowing that there's a much higher likelihood of them churning if they don't adopt, I want to sell them on that partner's paper, whether it's they have their own sales team that does it, but consolidate customers that are sold onto their paper so that they're their customers, right? And now we treat that service partner as one client of ours. And then as they lose clients and grow and gain clients each month, we take the net at the end of the month. We don't take every client that gets lost as churn, just the net. So then all of a sudden our gross retention for that segment might go from like an 85% to like a, you know, like a 90% or more.
And you're not tracking the logo churn. You're just tracking the revenue churn, right? Because you're counting the partner as the customer.
Exactly. Right? Exactly. Because it's hard. Right now, like every restaurant that fails or someone closes is churn for us today. And that's hard. So if you take all that out, so our gross retention is 92% right now, which I'm really proud of. But if you take out all like the just the nature of the beast of being in the restaurant industry, we're more like 95%.
Yeah, but that's not fair. I don't know, Christy, John, is that how churn is like calculated? Isn't there like an exception to churn if like the company goes under and it's not your fault?
No.
No, it should be. Why?
Are you kidding me? Like,
oh, I'm sorry. I didn't.
And most of the churn that I ever see is through M&A. Like, I don't have any control over that. That's still churn.
I'm Christy. I don't ever have any non-organic logo. Churn. I please all my customers. They never leave unless they go out of business. Like, really? That seems unfair, especially in the restaurant industry.
Okay. Yes. Every day we're sad.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is unfair, but that's the life that we lead.
That's the business.
Yeah. Yeah.
What's your top priority right now, Chris? You may have already mentioned it. But like we're just entering Q2 2024. What's your top priority?
Well, and there's a lot of priorities, but as a company, we've launched payroll, right? So now on top of accounting and then all like the operations side of a restaurant, we are now offering this real all-in-one solution, and payroll is a beast. So working all the kinks out of that and figuring out, to support a payroll client is very different than supporting an accounting client who can wait till tomorrow, right? Mm. Payroll is like, you've got to nail it. So that is definitely a top priority, is how do we get seen as leveled with all like the ADPs and, you know, the big players out there.
That's like really strategic, launching a payroll company. Why not like leave it to ADP?
Right.
Well, the TAM is huge. So payroll doubles the TAM for every client that we have.
Wow.
So the growth opportunity, and everybody hates their payroll provider.
They do.
Like,
yep.
I mean, which just means that they'll hate you guys in the future too, right?
So yeah, we're but
just
at least okay they're getting paid.
I'm okay with that. Yeah. Maybe that's way after my time. Hopefully no. But no, it's a really exciting opportunity. And we do, I mean, the fact that now we can integrate scheduling and their point of sale and all the different onboarding for a new employee with payroll in like one fell swoop, like that is really going to be a game changer for the industry. Because no one else.
And that, sorry, that did launch or that will launch?
It did launch. Yes.
When did it launch?
And like a year and a half ago.
Oh, okay. I mean, so you're into it now.
Different phases. Yeah, we're early adopters, and now we're really starting to push into maturing the product and maturing the onboarding and having our service partners able to implement payroll and accounting and operations. You know, like it's a big lift. It'll take years to come still to get it to the place where everything else is. But yeah, so that's one of my big priorities, I'll say.
What you hired, you know, you hired the AI maven, the foremost AI
maven.
I don't know. The foremost thought leader in AI, Mr. Mickey Powell. How are you thinking of AI within your organization, Chris?
Well, it is asked every board meeting still. What are you doing with AI?
Who asks it? Who asks it?
Which board members? I mean,
yeah, like what's the profile of the board members? Are these like the young guns, or these are like the
No, these are like the leaders, the chairs, like Bessemer Capital, KKR, Iconic. Like wow. they are asking, and,
those
and
are
but
legit
they're also
firm.
Admitting that they're also admitting that they're not seeing a lot of exciting things happening from their portfolio. So any news is kind of good news, right? Other than I think the support side, which is easier. But our challenge is that our products are very tier two, tier three heavy. We don't have a lot of tier one support.
Mm-hmm.
But you know that might change.
So what's your response to them?
I just try to buy some time and no. we hired Mickey. Like game over.
Yeah, I was gonna say like that's their answer. They're like, don't you know who Mickey is?
Yeah. Well, I heard some guy say on LinkedIn, which means it's absolutely true, that everybody is rushing to generate AI created content and nobody is consuming AI generated content. And I do feel like we are in this space where, we absolutely need to think about AI, but I still think we're in the early stage of application. And I think there's a lot of generative stuff happening, but I don't think there's a lot of solutions. I don't think there's a lot of like end games. Like Josh, what you're doing solves a very real problem. Right? There is this summary need. And what I am really excited about, even like if you can crack the code on the problem that your customers have with their data lake when it comes to the data that they have, right? I mean, you have all of this data that you're connected to through integrations and do X with it, like that gets you kind of into that next stage, right? And that's Mickey's incredible at kind of those thought experiences too. And it's funny because there was like, oh, we have a chatbot. Like, great. We've had that for 20 years. Like, whatever.
Yeah.
This one now has an accent. I don't know.
No, you know, we should bring Mickey on at some point again, because outside of the good banter, I know Mickey is going to start using AI if he's allowed, but to run analysis on your data. Because I've seen him do that really masterfully, like nobody else that I've ever seen. He's going to look for correlations and he's going to ask, you know, whatever it is, whether it's ChatGPT or whatever, he's gonna come up with deep insights and correlations, regression analysis type of things based on AI. If I can predict how Mickey will leverage AI for your organization,
I'd be very happy. And then from there,
well, that's the thing. Everyone's got tons of data, but no insights.
Yeah.
And then take those insights and create the pop-up campaigns, because I think that is valuable for clients to be. Hey, idiot, like you need to do this every day and you haven't done it for 5 days. Like you're wasting you're paying for the solution. You're not getting any value because like we need that kind of like shake these operators and wake them up to get the value from the software. All right. And then I love to, where was I going? I had a different thought. It's gone. But certainly.
I will wait.
Certainly. Having AI create those pop-ups or, you know, just set those up and manage that would be huge. We are doing the summary calls and following up and here's what it was. The next level, I think beyond that, it always comes back. I think there is tremendous value in being able to help our clients or for any SaaS, you know, for any industry, helping them benchmark against their peers. Like if I could,
huge.
You know, maybe not like, what is a QBR such a waste of time? But if I came to that QBR and I was like, hey, like here's how everyone, all the other pizza shops in metro areas in Texas are doing with their, like, here's their overtime and their gross margins on food. And here's like why we think you guys are like in fifth place. Wouldn't you like to be in first place? Like let's help you get there. Here's exactly what they're doing that you're not doing. That is powerful, right? And that's sticky. Like I think it's going to be really hard to get the data clean enough to do that.
Yeah.
But in a couple of years, like we got to be doing that, right? Or we're just doing the same old thing. Yeah, that to me is like how we level up our game at least.
Yeah. That's something that we actually have, So I work at a company called User Testing, and we do UX research and insights. And one of the big projects that we've been focused on over the last 2 years is this idea of benchmarking of, you know, you say you're doing this because we have all these insights, we have all of these customers, and it's, you know, it's generalized. So it's not like you're saying customer specific, whatever. It's like, in general, this industry should have these levels of success based on whatever categories we give, right? And here's your score, right? And it really gets that, to your point, that stickiness of deep insights that is not just, I'm looking at myself and I'm looking in the mirror, I'm saying, hey, I'm pretty. It's actually like, here's what everything looks like outside, so that we can start really competing, right? Everything's so insular, right? I mean, I was going to ask you about the competitive landscape, right? Like, what does it look like for you out there in the market when you're, you know, you said everybody that uses payroll sucks, right? So it's one of those things where you have to kind of pay attention to the competitive landscape. But if you have the ability to benchmark, that's your hole in one when it comes to somebody maybe leaving. It's like, well, yeah, but they're using this other software and, you know, here's their score, whatever that looks like.
Yeah, benchmarking it with competitors stuff, that's interesting as well. I mean, we'd only be using our own data, but for our own clients. But yeah, like, our competitors is really just a very fragmented space. Like, it's QuickBooks, right? It's Intacct. It's different for every segment. And that's the biggest challenge with doing this benchmarking, is that you don't care how you benchmark against fast casual if you're a fine sit down diner, you know? Mm-hmm. So really being able to, we got to get enough data to get super narrow to compare you to the other sandwich shops in your type of demographic area.
I love that.
And then, like, you guys are paying twice as much for your tomatoes as the guy down the street. You know, there's all that kind of fun stuff you could do too, right?
Grow your own tomatoes.
Yep. That's farm to table.
Grow
your own tomatoes. Yeah.
Yeah. That's not going to help your marginal cost. Cool. Chris, this was great. Yeah. You buried a few leads there. You buried the lead of how big your team is. You buried the lead of the fact that you were heroic during COVID and repurposing and finding new employment, and in a way that benefit both those people and the company and your customers. Mm-hmm. Thanks for being on the show. Sorry for the rocky start.
We're going to make sure Josh hits record next time.
Yep. Yeah.
All good.
And I came in a little hot. Yeah.
Are you in a better mood now? Did it cheer you up a little? You
missed the whole Josh's grumpy conversation.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
it was rough. It's probably good that we didn't record that first session, that first minute.
Oh, I love grumpy Josh.
I know. Grumpy Josh is my favorite.
Chris, thanks so much for being on. Awesome. We've actually wanted to have you on for a while, and wishing you and Mickey and Restaurant 365 the best success through the rest of the year.
Let's get him back on here once we accomplish something with him.
I love it.
Give him 2 more weeks. Yeah.
Perfect. 2 more weeks. Yeah.